This episode is sponsored by More Than a Number, the brand new podcast from ICAEW. Search for More Than a Number in your podcast app to hear Louise Cooper and thought leaders unpacking the numbers behind some of the most pertinent questions of our time.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily and these days more than daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and Stephen Bush from The New Statesman. So, will Boris Johnson do what was once seen as impossible and pass a Brexit deal tomorrow? That's the question everyone in Westminster is asking and the one that we are going to try and answer without tempting fate. Stephen, you seem quite optimistic that actually he could have the numbers to pass a deal.
Yes, I mean, or pessimistic, which kind of depends on your perspective. But I think so. The reason why up until late yesterday I would have said there is no prospect of this parliament passing a deal is there is no negotiable version of Brexit that both meets the Conservative desire for Brexit to have a point and to be able to diverge and secure meaningful trade deals, and the DUP's desire for decisions about Northern Ireland to be made in Northern Ireland or in Westminster. And then, although there are plenty of Labour MPs who in theory are willing to vote for a deal which allows divergence and puts a customs border in the Irish Sea, those Labour MPs will always choose their future in the Labour Party over helping Brexit happen under a Conservative Prime Minister. The two reasons why I have slightly shifted on that is, one, whether or not the Labour leadership is telling the truth or not, Labour MPs no longer think that they will lose the whip if they vote for a Brexit deal. And so that slightly changes their calculation. And two, equally crucially, right, the group that very few people have wanted to talk about, because it's awkward for the second referendum people to admit these people exist for one reason, and awkward for the Labour leadership to admit they exist for another, which is the group of committed left-wing supporters of an exit from the European Union who have mostly voted to frustrate Brexit because they have believed that when push comes to shove, Jeremy Corbyn is, to quote one of them, our guy, and will not stop Brexit. And the important shift, so yes, it's partly that Ronnie Campbell is standing down, but someone else in that group said to me, I used to think that Jeremy and I were as one on this, and now I realise, although he agrees with me about the EU, he doesn't care very much about it. And if you kind of add together retiring Labour MPs on the right who want to vote for Brexit, Labour MPs who want a future in the party who no longer think that they give it up by voting for Brexit, and Lexiteers going, actually, we don't think the leadership is going to protect this victory, then suddenly the Labour numbers become enough to outweigh the DUP, the handful of second referendum supporters in the Conservative Party, and the one or two ERG members who decide they care slightly more about the union with Northern Ireland than they do about having a Brexit with real divergence. Of course, so I would essentially say I've switched from saying, no, I think it will lose by a couple of votes, to going, actually, I think it will pass by a couple of votes. And I only have to be a little bit wrong about the personal courage of one or two Labour MPs, but I think it will pass.
And Fraser, on the Conservative side, we know the European Research Group of Eurosceptic backbenchers are meeting ahead of the vote to, I suppose, not necessarily work at a formal position, but decide what their verdict is. Do you get the sense that the bulk of Brexiteer MPs are welcoming what Boris Johnson has secured from Brussels?
I get the sense that they're playing a bit of a double game right now. I've spoken to quite a few of them recently, and they will usually say, look, I have to sound very harsh in public because we need to drive a hard bargain. But to be honest, of course, we're not going to reject this deal. This is the best we're going to get. You've seen a long list of pretty hardcore Brexiteers back this deal recently. An hour ago, I saw the Aaron Banks group, leave.eu, put out a tweet saying even they are backing the deal. Now, if Aaron Banks is doing it, you've got some people who are the founder member of the Better Off Out group. You've got all sorts of people who've been lifelong campaigners for Brexit, who opposed Theresa May's deal three times, who are way to the Brexit right of the ERG. And if they're backing it, you can't quite see why the ERG isn't backing it as well. But of course, this is politics, this is drama. They want to be wooed, they want to be seen to be players here. But I would be surprised if there were more than a handful of rebellions from the Tory side tomorrow. That's not to say that they like it, but politics isn't about what you like, it's about whether option A is better than option B. And they can work out that option B in this case is, you know, it would be an extension, it would be a second referendum, and it would also be them starting to look a little bit mad, took Nigel Farage yesterday. You could have sectioned him for half of the stuff he was saying on Twitter. I mean, he was just losing it. I was having a sort of digital breakdown because he was working out, really, that this was a question for the Brexiteers. Can you take yes for an answer? Now, if he does accept this is the deal, then that's it. The party's over. No more Brexit Party TV. Farage will be back to LBC broadcasting, giving speeches to Americans. So he's taking it rather hard. But those who have followed him every step of the journey are thinking that it will be pretty strange to complain that much about the deal now in front of them.
And Angela Merkel has suggested that an extension will be unavoidable if MPs reject the deal, which is quite different from what Jean-Claude Juncker was suggesting yesterday, which was that there wouldn't be an extension. How do you think that alters the, I suppose, the dynamics in terms of the vote and getting MPs on side?
Well, there was a time yesterday where Number 10 pretty much admitted that they'd asked the EU to rule out an extension. And the logic then was, let's focus MPs' minds, it's either our deal or no deal. If that had happened, we would be saying right now that he's going to pass no problem at all. Because how could the opposition MPs then vote for the no-deal calamity they've spent all summer warning us against? And I actually thought a deal had been done. As soon as I heard Boris had backed the deal, I thought, that's strange. The DUP aren't on board, so why on earth has he backed it? Because the numbers will be as tight as Stephen was just explaining. I assumed that they'd done a deal with the EU, but the EU was going to say, look, this deal or no deal. But then I found out, no, they actually don't have a strategy to win this. It's a gamble. Boris likes gambles, he likes to win gambles, but it's a gamble. But then, last night, after doing a lot of ring rounds, I then found out the underlying logic behind what seems to be a pretty crazy situation. They are holding this vote, which they know they might lose, because they think that even losing it is a win for them. If anything, it makes it better than a victory. If they lose, then it's quite easy to say to the country, look, we are the reasonable guys, we're the adults in the room, we want to get this Brexit deal, we've gave major concessions, you can't say anymore that Boris is so much of an ideologue that he wants to be crucified on this cross of a no-deal Brexit, nor can you say he's too incompetent to negotiate a deal. In fact, it's the Labour Party, it's the SNP, it's the Lib Dems. They are now the fringe characters. So if he loses the vote tomorrow, and I think there's a reasonable chance of that, I don't share Stephen's confidence, then the Tories will see this as a net plus. So that is why they're going ahead with a vote which they don't necessarily think they can win.
And Stephen, looking ahead to the possibility of an election in which a Brexit deal hasn't been passed, but all of a sudden Boris Johnson and his cabinet can say, look, we have one on the shelf ready to go. They don't have to talk about no deal. They can say, we have a Brexit-friendly Brexit deal. How do you think that looks for Labour and opposition parties? Is that challenging?
Well, so I think it sort of depends what party you're in. If it's great news for the Lib Dems, who have this sort of kind of St. Augustine-style position of, God, make me a Remainer, but not quite yet, because they want to stay in the EU, but they know that as long as Brexit is on the table, so is Cities and Westminster, so is Finchley and Golders Green, so is Hornsey and Wood Green, so are all of those affluent Remainer seats that David Cameron was so popular in. And I think the second than Brexit is off the table, then some of those people will look at Corbyn, think, do I really want to risk a Lib Dem vote? I just think they won't. Whereas if you're Labour, I kind of think their problem is that what they really needed was for the deal to pass in March before. I see this in my own social circle. Indeed, I myself feel it, right? Having felt reconciled to the fact that I accept that there was a democratic event and it therefore should happen, the bizarre rising of hope the second the Brexit process went past the 29th of March. And even though I know all of the democratic damage than Brexit not happening, those arguments haven't gone away and I still think they apply. But the voice in my head going, oh, but maybe we could stay, has definitely got bigger. And I know there are lots of Remainers in a more extreme position than I am. And I think the idea that hope being crushed, those people will then go, oh, I can't wait to march to the ballot box to vote for the Labour Party, I just think is crazy. I think lots of those people will stay home. Some of them will be angry enough that they'll vote Lib Dem, even in places they know they can't win, to spite the Labour Party. So I kind of think that, and if Brexit's still up for grabs, then of course it is this coalition splitting issue for Labour that means that instead of them being able to talk about the condition of the public realm, what's going on in the NHS, etc., etc., every question is a noun, a verb, and what about Brexit? An issue which they do not want the next election to be about. So I kind of think that it's great for the Lib Dems if it doesn't pass. It's probably not great for Labour if it doesn't pass, and I think it's almost certainly a disaster for both if it does pass.
And Stephen, you mentioned earlier on that Labour rebels would not lose the whip, and which surprised me. I thought that the people likely to rebel against Corbyn over this were exactly the sort of guys he wanted out of the party anyway. So if they did it and he withdrew the whip, that would save them the trouble of purging them later on. But you think they won't face that sort of punishment if they were to vote with Boris tomorrow?
Well, so what's being sort of very heavily briefed isn't they won't lose that punishment, including from the MPs themselves. So presumably that means the whips aren't going, you'll lose it.
Because otherwise, what's the point in having a withdrawal of the whip gambit if you don't publicise it well in advance?
Yeah. But as you say, if you're Corbyn and your interests, and I think essentially everyone agrees, whether they think this is a good thing or a bad thing, that Jeremy Corbyn's interests are best served by an election in which Brexit is off the table and he can kind of go, wasn't that awful? Don't you all agree you haven't had a pay rise for a while? However, he needs to be able to go, wasn't that awful, and have plausible deniability. And if I were him, what I would do is I would be putting about that I wasn't going to take the whip away, but then of course I would, right? I mean, the people who are going to vote for it, you know, the Labour leadership has been very good at getting its people in open selections where they can use their control of the shortlist to manipulate the outcome, as Labour leaders are wont to do, and very bad at getting sitting MPs deselected. And if I were them, I would see an opportunity to get rid of Ruth Smith, Gareth Snell, Melanie Onn, people who are all Corbyn sceptics to a greater or lesser extent. And I would go, oh, don't worry, of course you won't lose the whip.
And then just whack them all.
And then just whack them all afterwards. But this
journalists would like you as Labour leader.
But this is the kind of question that I kind of have. I think, you know, maybe I'm just, you know, more cynical and paranoid than the average Labour leaver. But I feel that if I were Melanie Onn and I'd been told, don't worry, you won't lose the whip, I'd just be like, yeah, and the three bears. I mean, what it's every bit in his interest, right? It means he can turn around to Remainers and said, I tried, I don't like what they did either. But he's managed to remodel the parliamentary party. I mean,
do you think this could be his secret plan, or perhaps after Jeremy Corbyn listens to this podcast?
Yeah, I mean, the thing Jeremy Corbyn always says is, you know, how much he loves The Spectator, and yeah, can't wait to get out of its shrink wrap when it arrives at his home every week. But, I mean,
we're actually quite environmentally friendly, so we don't do that.
Oh, but it's possible that could be what they're planning. Equally, I mean, because there are people in that inner circle who do want Brexit to happen, maybe it is, yeah, maybe I am being overly cynical and they do genuinely not plan to go, whoops, I know we said you weren't going to lose the whip, but that was fun while it lasted, wasn't it? But I mean, doesn't it just make sense?
Well, we will find out soon enough.
If making sense were a test of things happening in politics, we'd all be in a very different place right
now. And this podcast would be considerably more dull. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Fraser.
Thanks to our sponsor, More Than a Number, the new podcast from ICAEW. Here presenter Louise Cooper in discussion with thought leaders, unpacking the numbers behind some of the most pertinent questions of our time. Are businesses ill-prepared to cope with climate change? Is workplace inequality inevitable? And do businesses really have an age problem? Simply search for More Than a Number in your podcast app to download now.